Austin, Texas was hot for AEW tonight, and they were rewarded with an excellent show. This was a return to form tonight for AEW. I thought this was a very enjoyable 2 hours, and much better than the show that we saw Monday night. Tonight in the main event, we had the Acclaim defending the AEW Tag Team Championship against FTR, who have every set of tag team belts except the AEW Tag Team belts. And tonight, this is the first time these two teams have gone toe-to-toe. We got a clean finish to what I thought was a very good main event. And then at the very end of the match, FTR, flash pin, can't pick up the win. Acclaim retain their titles. We have Billy Gunn's Spawn pop up on the big screen announcing that at Final Battle this Saturday, because there is a Ring of Honor pay-per-view this weekend, FTR is going to defend their Ring of Honor tag team titles, not against Austin and Colton Gunn. They're going to be defending the titles against Jay and Mark Briscoe. We're going to get FTR and Briscoe's Part 3, and it will be a dog collar match for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championship. I love how Warner hates the Briscoes so much that we had the Ass Boys cutting their promo for them. Would not even let them on TV to cut a promo to promote the pay-per-view for Saturday. There you go. If you were on the fence about the Ring of Honor show, perhaps that match will tip you over, because we're only a few weeks away from the end of the year awards, match of the year, wrestler of the year. I've already got my list, by the way, for match of the year. I have to cut it down. I'm going to do a top 15 this year. I have about 18. I've narrowed the list down to 18. Now I've got to try to get it down to 15. But on a lot of people's lists, you have to expect that you're going to find at least one, if not both, of the matches this year with FTR and Briscoes. And now they have the chance to go out there this weekend and add a third match as a potential match of the year candidate. So that was a very last-minute announcement on tonight's show. But the other thing that stands out tonight, last week, I talked about how Tony Khan announced Ricky Starks for a battle royal. A meaningless battle royal for the Dynamite Diamond Ring, the right to challenge for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. A Dynamite Diamond Ring, frankly, that no longer needs to exist. And that he would be out of his mind if he just put Ricky Starks in a battle royal but didn't put a live microphone in his hand for a segment with MJF. This is the final Dynamite before winter is coming next week. You have to put a microphone in this man's hand. You have to let him go out there and sell it, because he can go out there and he can do the job. MJF, right, one of the best talkers in the entire company, one of the best talkers in wrestling today. Ricky Starks can more than hold his own. Just give him the chance. And he did just that tonight. Tonight we got a live in-ring mic battle between Ricky Starks and MJF, and it was glorious. Ricky Starks went out there. Not only did he hold his own, but he put MJF in his place in a segment that I thought was fantastic. And the only regret that I have is that we only have 1 week until the match. There wasn't enough time to really get us excited about wanting to see this match. 1 week is all they had, and I thought they made the most of it tonight. I thought that was an excellent segment. We're going to talk about that. Something else I loved tonight: Samoa Joe, Darby Allin, TNT Championship. This was a return to form for the TNT title. We got to see a Samoa Joe tonight that we have not seen in many years because of injuries and other issues. He was a commentator. He was a coach. And even since debuting in AEW, we really have not been able to see the Samoa Joe of old. Tonight was, in many ways, the Samoa Joe of old. We got to see Joe as a monster ass kicker that he was known to be back in the day. Darby Allin is going to be crippled in a wheelchair in 10 years. I think he's incredibly stupid taking the kind of bumps that he takes. But I will say, he takes a beating like nobody else in wrestling that I can think of today. And it made for a very entertaining match. He's not going to feel very good when he wakes up in the morning. He's probably not feeling very good right now as we speak. But I love that match. I love that TNT title match. And we had the final appearance, what I assume is going to end up being the final appearance on AEW television of one William Regal. We did not know what Tony Khan had in store, other than we knew William Regal was going to be talked about on the show tonight. We didn't know in what capacity. And what they did tonight, I thought, was actually a very nice way of tying up his story arc on this show, given the circumstances of his departure. And we learn more today about the circumstances around William Regal leaving AEW. Tony Khan confirmed the news, and we now know, according to Tony Khan, as per William Regal, the reason why Regal is leaving AEW to go back to WWE. So we're going to talk about that because I've got news coming out of Tony Khan's media call today and thoughts on a few other topics. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, December 7, 2022. I am the Solid Monster. We are trying, for those who are not aware, we are trying to hit 72,000 subscribers by the end of this month. It's only a matter of a few hundred. I'm trying to see if we can hit 72K as we ring in the new year. I can't do that without you. So if you are not already subscribed to the channel, please go ahead and do that and help us get there. Now, Tony Khan had a media call today ahead of the Ring of Honor pay-per-view this Saturday and had a lot of different things to say, but the main topic of conversation centered around William Regal and all the rumors of his departure, possible departure from the company. So he talked about the Regal stuff, and normally this is not something Tony Khan would even sit and talk about because Tony Khan has been very secretive about a lot of the behind-the-scenes goings-on when it comes to specific members of the roster. Right? We saw that with all the brawl-out stuff and talk about, well, it's a legal thing, can't talk about that, can't talk about that. And he still won't talk about that. But he was open in a way that he normally is not on these calls, which I thought was a refreshing thing. And the explanation that we got today was not surprising to me. If you listen to the podcast that I did on Sunday, episode 785 of The Sound Off, shout out to Cody Moore, by the way, for becoming a channel member. Cody, thank you very much. On episode 785 on Sunday, I was talking about Regal, and I was talking about potential reasons that he might want to leave and go back to WWE. Obviously, he's very good friends with Triple H. He looked after Triple H. He was a mentor in many ways to Triple H. He and Terry Taylor both, back when Triple H was just starting out in WCW. So their relationship goes back a long ways. He was Triple H's right-hand man at the Performance Center down in NXT. It was not Triple H's decision for him to leave WWE. It was a Vince McMahon decision because Vince McMahon was trying to eliminate almost all of Triple H's allies down in NXT, blow the whole thing up outside of Shawn Michaels and start fresh. That's what he was trying to do. Triple H, I'm sure, was very upset when he learned that William Regal was fired. People like to say, oh, he was released. He was let go. No, he was fucking fired. You can say what it was. He got fired. So there's no, you know, question that Triple H wanted him back and that he probably wanted to go back and work for Triple H. But I said also keep in mind that, you know, William Regal has a son working in NXT. We've seen him on television, Charlie Dempsey. And I said, if you take one look at this kid, there's no doubt in your mind who he's related to. I mean, you just look at him and you say, hey, look, it's William Regal's kid, right? You don't even need anybody to tell you to know that. And I said, at the end of the day, it may just come down to family. Those are my exact words. It may just come down to family. He may want to be there to help in the progress and the evolution of his son in NXT. It could just be a very simple explanation for this. Well, as it turned out, that's exactly what it was. And there's a reason why when I did the podcast on Sunday, I didn't talk about what EC3 had to say about William Regal, because I knew about that before I recorded the podcast, and I said nothing about it. And the reason I said nothing about it is because what the fuck does EC3 know about why William Regal wants to leave AEW? As soon as I saw that it was EC3 on a podcast with Vince Russo, I said, I'm not talking about this. I'm going to have to get my information from a better source. Other people talked about it. They reported on it as if it were fact, as if it were news. I didn't say a word about it because I didn't buy a word of it. And then there were reports that came out that all this stuff about Regal feeling disrespected and the young guys not going to him for advice, it's all bullshit. I'm sure most of it was bullshit. That's why I didn't talk about it. But on the call today, Tony Khan revealed that he first learned that Regal was hoping to return to WWE during what was a very difficult time for his family. This was something else that we did not know that Tony Khan revealed today for the first time. He said that in the weeks following all the drama coming out of Brawlout, Tony Khan's mother suffered two strokes and required an operation for a spot that was found on her heart. And he was at home with his parents celebrating his 40th birthday on October 10th when he received a phone call about William Regal. He said, "I watched Monday Night Football at my parents' house with my parents." He goes, "My mom was hooked up to a lot of machines, and I was just praying that my mom's surgery would go okay. That same night, I got a phone call saying that William Regal had approached Mega," Mega being the chief legal officer. I believe she's also an EVP in the company. "And it was all very legitimate, valid stuff. Basically, he's got a son who works at another wrestling promotion, and he really wanted us at the end of the year, when we had the option to renew his contract, he was asking that we not do so. He said, nothing bad. We were having a great time working together, but that this was an opportunity for him to go back and work in his golden years of his career with his son. He said, it's a very complex situation for AEW because he is a huge part of what we are doing on screen, and we value him. And there's multiple storylines that he's involved in at any point. As we were going to Toronto that week, obviously I had a lot on my mind." He said, "This was the timing of the request from Regal, and I really had to think about it. Both those shows in Toronto were very successful. And then at the end of the week, my mom had this heart surgery. And when I got back, my dad and my sister had already been there at the hospital since the previous day." He said, "My mom was asleep, and I got a message from Regal asking if I could talk, if we could talk. I made time to talk to him and went outside the hospital. So I'm sitting on a park bench out in front of the Mayo Clinic on Sunday night, and we had this really long, good talk, and it was very positive. He really had good intentions, I'd like to say, for why he wanted to go back. It made a lot of sense to me that he would want to work with his son and be with his son. Frankly, the last thing I wanted to do at that moment was prevent any parent and any child, any son, from being together as I was sitting on a park bench in Jacksonville outside the Mayo Clinic, where my own mother was sleeping inside recovering from a major operation." He said, "Later that week, we had Rampage at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, and I sat with Regal for over 90 minutes in my office afterward. This was probably the longest in-person talk I've ever had with him. We talked, and I told him I'll make major sacrifices to this company to do the best thing for you and your family, because this is a family-first company. He said, the person I'm releasing later this month, who is still with us through the holidays, has been an essential part of multiple TV stories and is still an essential part of TV as of tonight. And we've done a lot of things to help him create the best situation he can for his family. He said, for me, my mom is doing really well, and we're really grateful. I probably won't be able to facilitate every family reunion, but I do try to make this a family-first company, and especially in this situation, that is what we have done." And that hit a little bit different for me than maybe it would for someone else, because Tony Khan and I are the exact same age. Tony Khan's birthday is 4 days after my birthday, and we were born the same year. And when he talks about, you know, being in the hospital and, you know, being all stressed out and nervous and not knowing what's going to happen with his mother, personally, even that's something I can relate to. I can relate to being in that situation. I can remember being in the hospital and waiting outside the hospital and leaving work every day and going straight to the hospital and then coming home at 11 o'clock at night. I've been there myself. And it's not a fun situation to be in. It affects every aspect of what you do. It's all you're thinking about. You're consumed by it because all you want is for your loved one, for your mother in this case, to get better and to survive and to do better. And so I know what that's like. I know that fear, that stress, all of that. So I'm very happy that his mother is doing well. Obviously, nobody knew about this because it was a private matter. He didn't tell anybody. And so I'm very happy that she is at least doing better. As I said, I mentioned Regal's son on the podcast on Sunday. Sometimes it just comes down to family. I think that's a totally logical, understandable explanation, if that's what it was. And I think it's a very nice thing for him to do, because it's something that he didn't have to do. Tony Khan did not have to say to William Regal, "I'll let you go." He could have been like, "Look, I sympathize with you. I understand, but you signed a contract. And I have you involved in multiple storylines here on TV, right? I have all these plans. I need you here." And there was nothing Regal could do about it. But Tony Khan was able to work something out. Now, he did say that Regal asked him not to pick up the option on his contract at the end of the year. Tony said that he would consider it, and then they ended up giving him a conditional release, I guess, as a compromise. So that was a little weird, because again, he said, "Please don't pick up the option on the contract. That way the contract, I guess, would just expire." But instead they worked out something where it's a conditional release. He said that the release is under the condition that he works for WWE as a coach and not as an on-air talent. So that was the compromise that they reached. "I'll let you go, but you can't be on television. You can't be a manager. You can't be a general manager or anything like that." I assume it's for a period of whatever the duration is left on Regal's contract. If Regal did sign a 3-year deal, or maybe it was a 1-year deal, 2-year deal, whatever the length of the deal was, however much time is left, I would imagine that's the length of time for which he will not be allowed on television. So I would not be expecting William Regal on WWE or NXT television for probably all of 2023. Which means that if Triple H does War Games again next year, probably won't be getting William Regal on TV shouting War Games if he's not allowed on TV. But that was the compromise that they made. Speaking of War Games, Tony Khan made another comment. He said that he was surprised by Triple H's War Games tweet, and he did not feel it was in the spirit of AEW accommodating Regal's request. And when I heard that, you know, first of all, it's past footage the WWE owns. For those who don't know, the day of War Games, Triple H went on Twitter and he put out a message, which was a video compilation of all the times that William Regal in the past for NXT has shouted War Games. And obviously that got a lot of people talking. Why is he posting that? Is he trolling? What is he? Is it a sign of something that's happening? Which obviously it was. But people weren't sure exactly what that was all about. So that's what Tony is referring to. And obviously it bothered him. It's WWE's own footage. You know, they could do with the footage whatever they want. It was pretty clear, Triple H being the one to post it, you know, it was kind of a wink and a nod, right? It wasn't just a random thing that he was doing. Even if there was something sneaky or nefarious about what Triple H did, and there wasn't. Yeah, there was nothing evil about what Triple H did. But even if there was, you know, here's the thing. I'll say this about Tony Khan. He takes these things very personally. And I don't understand why he is so surprised by this, because he, of all people by now, should know that this is what WWE does, whether it's Vince McMahon or Triple H. And Triple H learned from Vince McMahon, this is what they do. They play games with people. They don't always play nice with others. This is what they do. This is their MO. And I don't know why he is consistently surprised by this. I don't know why he continues to feel blindsided by all of these things that they do. It's like All Out Weekend. He was so upset. He took it as a personal affront that they would run two shows the same weekend as their big annual Labor Day weekend pay-per-view. Like they own Labor Day weekend. Now here comes WWE running an NXT show on one day and Clash at the Castle the day before. And as you saw at the press scrum, after all the Punk stuff, Tony was sitting there and he was fuming. He was fuming. "I'm not going to take this shit anymore. This is why now I know how Jim Crockett feels." That's what he was referring to. So he allows himself to get riled up and get so bothered and get so offended by this stuff. I don't know why this would really come as a surprise to him. This is what they do. This is what they do. They don't always deal in good faith. That's just how they've always been. I would not take it personally. He also talked about Ring of Honor returning to weekly television. He said that he has two amazing companies. AEW comes first, but he does not want Ring of Honor to take a back seat. But the big news is, he said he also doesn't want Ring of Honor to be the focus of AEW television. And after this week, he will be limiting how much ROH exposure there is on AEW TV, which is something that is long overdue. I've been talking about it. I know a lot of people, a lot of you guys probably have been complaining about it. Why is there so much ROH on AEW TV? I don't care about Ring of Honor. I want to see AEW. Well, it sounds like your prayers have been answered, because he recognizes it all. So I'm sure he's hearing a lot of that same feedback. And so he made it very clear coming out of Final Battle this weekend that will no longer be the case. Not that there will never be any Ring of Honor mentioned, but there will be a lot less of it on TV. He punted on the question about a weekly Ring of Honor show to after Final Battle. And he sort of implied that he may have something to announce about that. Maybe not on Saturday night, but after Saturday. So it sounds like we're getting closer to some kind of announcement about a weekly Ring of Honor show. Now, one thing completely unrelated to Regal and Ring of Honor, and then we can get into the review here, because I wanted to mention this. This was also a bit of news today. He was talking about Athena, former Ember Moon, and he commented on Athena, and he said that he thinks she's doing the best work of her career right now. And Athena is going to be challenging Mercedes Martinez for the Ring of Honor Women's Championship at Final Battle this Saturday. On the subject of Athena, reason I bring this up, she was on Busted Open Radio this week. And she addressed the criticism that she's gotten lately for working too stiff, because I've seen a lot of this. I've seen a lot of this criticism. This is what she said about this. A lot of people don't know that for 10 years before I got signed to WWE, I was probably one of the most notorious heels or bad guys or villains, whatever you smart folk out there want to call it. I worked my entire indie career as the bad guy going around. I even got given the nickname American Joshi because of my hard-hitting style. And I think people just forget about that. And honestly, throughout my entire TV career, it's always something that I've wanted to get back to. She agreed with Thunder Rosa's point. Rosa, I think, was co-hosting the show that day, about there being a bit of a double standard when it comes to the men being physical on TV as opposed to the women being physical, overly physical on TV. She said, people forget that the girls can hit just as hard as the guys. I have to sit here and see Jon Moxley and Jericho and who else, Yuta and all these guys hit the tar out of each other. And I guarantee you, if I was a man, I feel like there wouldn't be as much backlash or anything like that. It's all these old, bloated farts that want to sit there and tell us, oh no, we need to go out there and look pretty. And then they complain when it's a dance. They complain when we hit hard. Get over it. We're out there to be just as good as the guys, and we give it our all. We put in all of this time and effort to hone our craft, and I feel like sometimes we are underappreciated when we do things like that. I happen to agree with her. I think she's absolutely right. I don't detect any lies in anything that she said there in that statement. That's why I didn't make a big stink about it back in October when they were in Toronto and she had that match where everybody was complaining, oh my God, did you see what she did to this poor girl? My God, she dumped her out of the ring and she's being so stiff with her and all this. That was the match with Jody Threat, who was local, and you know, she got the hometown reaction and the hometown, you know, girl going out there getting a big match with Athena, and Athena beat the tar out of her. And there were people and other podcasters, oh, she's so reckless and she's this and she's that. And they just acted so offended by what she did. And she's right. If that was Walter or someone like that in the ring beating the hell out of somebody, nobody would complain. Nobody would complain. Everybody would praise it. Oh, this is so great. My God. And a lot of times when we see the women out there, including women in AEW, but it's not exclusive to AEW. It could be WWE as well. It does look like they're in a dance. It does. You know, some of them go out there, they look like they're barely tapping each other. It just looks ridiculous. And so you have people who are going to complain about the fact that some of these women go out there and, man, you know, they're barely like little love taps. They're barely touching each other. It looks like some kind of dance, or you know, acrobatic, you know, whatever. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. It's one of the things I love about Jamie Hayter's matches, frankly. And the match that Jamie Hayter had with Toni Storm at Full Gear. That was a hard-hitting match. One of the things I loved about it. One of the best matches on the entire show. They go out there and it looks like they're having a fight. That's why I love Jamie Hayter being the AEW Women's Champion now. And even when Toni Storm had the championship. I like those types of matches. You cannot, on the one hand, say, oh, it looks like a, they're, you know, it looks like a dance, and then say when they get a little stiff, oh, they're being reckless. This woman doesn't know how to work. What happened here? Did she, you know, spill coffee on her backstage? That's completely unprofessional. What is she doing here? I didn't have an issue with it. I think she's absolutely right when she says that. And I've been enjoying her new attitude on TV. I laughed my ass off a few weeks ago when she punched Aubrey Edwards in the face. I thought that was great. So I think Athena, this new sort of attitude shift or attitude change that she's had on TV going heel, I think has served her very well as compared to what she was doing before. I think it's great. I think it's a great direction for her character, and I think that there was really nothing she said there that was wrong. So anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest. Let's get into this show. Athena was not on the show tonight, but we had Dynamite opening with footage from MJF's attack last week on William Regal, with Excalibur alerting us that Regal is still in the hospital with Bryan Danielson by his side. So Bryan Danielson was not in the building. He was not on the show tonight. Before I move on, I do want to acknowledge that we had five channel memberships that were purchased here. I didn't see who it was. Let me see if I could back up here. I want to show some love to that person. If I could find, man, you guys are going crazy in the chat, so I can't even go that far back. Wow. Well, whoever it was, thank you very much. We have at least six new channel members, so welcome to the channel. I appreciate that. It is the season of giving, right? It is December. We are headed to Christmas. Everyone feeling in a very festive giving mood. I love it. So after that, they kick things off with the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal, with the winner facing MJF for what they said was control of the Dynamite Diamond Ring for the next year. And the winner gets to pick when and where they get to challenge MJF for the ring. Oh, it's Steven. Okay, there we go. Steven Chappa. Thank you, Steve. I wanted to make sure I gave Steven credit. Steven Chappa, thank you for buying those memberships. And Bobby's World. Bobby's World just gifted a channel membership as well to Mengetsu. Thank you. Now, I want you to keep in mind what I just said about the fact that the winner gets to pick when and where they get to challenge MJF for the ring. Okay, keep that in mind, because I'm going to talk about that later. So Ricky Starks got the first entrance. There were already a bunch of people who were introduced off air. They were surrounding the ring. Ricky Starks got the first televised entrance. Jungle Boy got his entrance, which you have to give Jungle Boy an entrance just to justify the cost of Baltimora whenever he comes out. You can't pay for Baltimora and then not give Jungle Boy a televised entrance. That's just ridiculous. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, thank you for gifting Mr. Dynamite a channel membership as well. A sea of green. It's all I see in the chat. A sea of green. Use those emojis. Dustin Rhodes was out next, just back from knee surgery, we were told, and he also just announced this past week that 2023 is going to be his final year in the ring. He is retiring from the ring after next year. So he got a big pop since they were in his hometown here of Austin, Texas. We had Matt Hardy, Orange Cassidy, Brian Cage, Dalton Castle, Lee Moriarty, Ethan Page, Kip Sabian, Captain Sean Dean. Salute to the good captain. And The Butcher. They were the other entrants. I don't know why The Blade wasn't in there. The Blade was at ringside, but The Blade was not in the Battle Royal. Orange Cassidy was the first one out, which was kind of surprising. Dustin eliminated Kip Sabian after a destroyer, but The Butcher eliminated Dustin after that. Brian Cage tried to eliminate Dalton Castle, who was super over. A lot of people were super over in front of this crowd. You know, this crowd tonight in Austin really made it feel like one of the Dynamites of old. This Dynamite had that feeling of one of the earlier episodes of Dynamite, and the crowd had a lot to do with that. Their enthusiasm and their energy really, I think, elevated the show that much more. Because we've had some crowds on Dynamite recently, kind of like we've had in WWE, frankly. I think we had one the other night, where it just they sit on their hands and they don't make a lot of noise. And it just feels like, well, they're not really into what they're seeing. But that was not the case tonight. So shout out to Austin, Texas. You guys were great. So Cage was trying to eliminate Dalton Castle, but the boys were outside. Every time they would knock Castle off the apron, the boys would catch him and they would prop him back up. So that happened two or three times. Finally, though, Cage just dumped Castle out onto the boys and they all hit the floor. Jungle Boy took out Brian Cage on the apron with a meteora from the ropes. And then Cage sort of rolled off the apron to the floor. That was heading into the first picture-in-picture break. Ricky Starks eliminated the Butcher. Jungle Boy dumped Lee Moriarty with a leaping Rana. He just came running at him, jumped up, took him out over the top rope with the Rana. As Jungle Boy was holding onto the ropes, W. Morrissey, the big guy, he was outside the ring. He booted Jungle Boy and knocked him to the floor, which eliminated him. Then he picked him up and he gave him a disgusting chokeslam on the edge of the ring. I don't mean that he chokeslammed him onto the apron. He chokeslammed him shoulders first right into the edge. And it looked very nasty. So Ethan Page now is in the ring. And Ethan Page, as he promised last week that he would do, he forced Matt Hardy to help him. Because again, Matt Hardy, he's like an indentured servant now. He is at the mercy of Ethan Page and the firm, I guess. He has to do what they tell him to do. So he's forcing Matt Hardy to help him. They tried to dump Ricky Starks out, but the captain, Sean Dean, came over to break things up. He dropped Ethan Page with a rock-style float-over DDT and then tried to dump Ethan Page. Hardy, though, came over to help, and he gave the good captain a twist of fate. Page dumped Captain Dean. That left us with Ethan Page, Matt Hardy, and Ricky Starks as the final three. Page and Hardy, they started a two-on-one beatdown on Ricky. Hardy went to deliver a twist of fate. Stark slipped out, and he dumped Matt Hardy out of the ring. So that left us with two men. That left us with the final two men from the end of the world title eliminator, Ricky Starks and Ethan Page. Starks landed a tornado DDT. Page came back, picked up Starks for a running slam, but as he was doing it, Starks grabbed the top rope. He pulled the top rope down, and he pulled Ethan Page to the floor. Eliminating him, Ricky Starks wins the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal. Not a surprise. When you look at the lineup and the names that they announced, Ricky Starks probably would have been number one on most people's list. But he didn't even have a chance to hear his name announced as the winner before MJF's music hit. And now here comes the AEW World Champion down to the ring. He spit his gum out, threw it at somebody in the crowd. That's the new thing now. So MJF gets in the ring. And first, he addressed Bryan Danielson not being there tonight. He said because he is terrified of MJF. He is keeping his distance. So then he turned to Ricky Starks. And this is where it got good. And he said, a week from now, he's going to be a four-time Dynamite Diamond Ring champion. Again, keep that in mind. Remember that. Going to be a four-time Dynamite Diamond Ring champion and will still be the holder of the grandest prize of them all. The Triple B. He recognized how much the people really seem to like Ricky. And he said they talk about him like he's some underutilized god of pro wrestling, but the truth is, in comparison to him, he is the absolute drizzling shits. Or should I say, you're a Rudy Poo candy ass, considering that you've stolen literally everything else from that guy. He called Starks a dollar store Dwayne. Just brutal. I think I talked about this back when Starks was on NWA Power, back when I was actually watching NWA Power, how much he did remind me of The Rock as far as the mannerisms that he was. I mean, you could tell The Rock was an influence on him. It was as obvious as The Rock and Stone Cold being an influence on Eli Drake. And thankfully, LA Knight has kind of toned it down a little bit. But there was a period of time, and maybe it was like this when he was in Impact too, but there was a period of time when he was in the NWA where, I mean, he just looked like a clone. The way he was, like his mannerisms and the way he would carry himself, like a Stone Cold Rock hybrid clone. And, you know, I can understand borrowing certain attributes from both guys, right? Two of the biggest stars in the history of the business, so why not? But you also have to sort of, you know, put your own stamp on it and make it your own. I think he's done a better job of that. But I remember saying that and thinking that about Ricky Starks back then. So it was funny that he would bring that up here. He says he's going to start calling him the Pebble. And people in the crowd started laughing. Next week in the main event of Dynamite, he's going to put him in his pocket. He's going to hop in his new Porsche. He's going to drive him to the nearest body of water. He's going to take him out of his pocket and he's going to skip his scrawny little ass back to Billy Corgan's NWA. So he can wrestle on YouTube where he belongs. And he said he doesn't care that he's absolute because he is a generational talent and his reign of terror has begun. For those who don't know, MJF has trademarked or filed a trademark application, I believe it is, for the term reign of terror. So that's something we're going to be hearing a lot more of in the future. He got tips from Chris Jericho. You just start trademarking everything. How many things did Chris Jericho trademark? What was the one that Jericho was trying to get over? The GFY. Right. That was what he was trying to get over. Until Jon Moxley came back from rehab and literally his first appearance on television told somebody in the crowd to go fuck yourself. That was it. There was no point anymore in Jericho using GFY because Moxley just usurped him and just said it on TV, so. Not everything that Jericho touches turns to gold. So Ricky, it's his turn now to respond. And Ricky Starks blows right by him. Shoulder checks him as he walks by him. He's walking over to grab a microphone of his own. Because now it's time to respond to MJF. He called him MaxiPad, which got over huge with the crowd. Loud MaxiPad chants. He said that he should have expected a fifth-rate Roddy Piper wannabe to come out here and steal the spotlight. He says, every week you come out here, you smell like paint thinner and ass. You spray tan your eczema. You've got some crappy shoes on, a shitty scarf, a terrible-ass haircut. And you think that you're better than moi? He says, give me a break. Everything about you screams cheap. The cheap suits, the cheap shoes, the cheap heat. Oh my God, and you're the AEW champion now, huh? He says, well, here's the thing. With that AEW championship comes a big responsibility that you know nothing about. He says, the difference between you and me is that when these people got behind me, I gave them a reason to keep going. And when they wanted to root for you, you let them down. But I deliver every day. Every day, every week, every month. And as he was talking, the people were getting more and more into it. He says, and you could take your little ass to Greece for 3 months because you didn't get paid enough, but I've been here busting my ass. He says, you avoid responsibility. I show up for meet and greets, but you don't care. You just blow them off. There comes a lot of responsibility when it comes to people actually liking you. And besides your nose being a lot darker than the rest of your body, I live with dignity and respect. When I lived in my car in South Austin, I was grinding. And you think because you kiss ass that you can do whatever you want. He says, please, give me a break. He says, next week is a big deal because I'm putting up and shutting you up for once in your narcissistic little punk-ass life. Next week, I'm smacking the mole off your neck, and I'm taking your title. I'm going to do you a favor that you've never had done for you in your life. I'm going to take that responsibility off your plate, little boy. So MJF doesn't like this very much. MJF responds with a low blow, kicks him right in the balls, right in his little Rickies. Down to his knees goes Ricky Starks. He goes to hit him with the AEW title. Starks ducks it, hits the ropes, comes off, and blasts him with a spear. It's a great spear. And MJF sold it great. The place popped huge for it. And that was the end of their segment. I loved every minute of this. I thought this was great. The fans loved it. Did you hear that reaction? For Ricky Starks. Did you hear that reaction for this guy? That is a superstar reaction right there for someone who has not been booked like a superstar on this show. He's been a solid mid-card guy on this show. Very much, you know, here 1 minute, gone the next. Part of it was injury. part of it was some kind of personal issue he had coming out of Grand Slam that was personal, so we don't know what it was. But, you know, he had that big match with Powerhouse Hobbs and that big win in New York City and then disappeared. And it's hard to get momentum. If you start building momentum, it's hard to keep that momentum if you're off television for weeks at a time, right? The key with him and a lot of these young AEW guys they're trying to get over is repetition, reps. Just keep getting reps on TV. Keep showing up every single week on TV. Have some kind of consistent storyline, and hopefully you will get over. It's hard to get over when you're not on television, right? We're seeing that with a lot of other people right now. People wondering, hey, where's this guy? Where's that guy? Ricky Starks should not be one of those people. So it was nice to see him go out there and not just get a big reaction, but get a superstar reaction. This guy's a superstar in the making, and tonight he took a very big step towards being made with this promo. This is the promo of his life tonight. In front of another crowd, it may not have come off as great because you've had some crowds recently where it's like pulling teeth trying to get a reaction out of them. He was in the right place tonight at the right time. And so he came off like a very big deal here in this segment. I said it last week. Again, Tony Khan had 1 week. He had 1 week left before winter is coming to put a microphone in both these guys' hands. Just let them go out there and let them do their thing. And that's exactly what he did tonight. He let them go out there. He let them do what they do best. You know, when MJF called him the Rock wannabe and the Pebble and all that, and the people laughed, I got nervous for him. Because I said, you know, you don't want that kind of reaction, right? You would hope people would boo that. People were laughing and maybe agreeing with what MJF was saying. I said, ooh, that's tough, right? He's going to really have to come back with something good. And when this promo was over, people weren't talking about that. They weren't talking about him being called the Pebble. They were talking about, hey, Ricky Starks, they want him to win the AEW World title. He didn't just stand in there and, you know, look decent next to MJF. He didn't just stand in there and look like, you know, he was capable. He more than held his own. He gave it back to him and then some. So I love this segment. I thought this was great. It was a great way to get that main event over next week as a really big deal. It's too bad the match is next week and that we couldn't get more from these two. We just had this week. That was it, right? This is all we got. And then next week, it's already the match. We know MJF is not losing. He just won the championship. But it's hard to imagine them having a better face-off than the one they had tonight. So in a way, maybe this was the peak. Better not to drag it out for too long. I guess there's that argument as well. I just wish we could have gotten, you know, more time out of this. Come back a year from now. Ricky is not winning the title next Wednesday. But come back a year from now. If Tony Khan does right by Ricky Starks, he has all the tools to be one of the top stars in this company. There may be guys who are physically bigger than him on that roster. He's not physically the biggest. He's not the smallest either. If Tony Khan plays his cards right and does right by him as far as the booking, and I know Tony Khan's been very hit or miss when it comes to booking of a lot of people in this company, but if he does his job a year from now, we could be looking at Ricky Starks as the one to take the AEW World title away from MJF. You know, it could be Wardlow. It could be Darby Allin. It could be somebody else. Ricky Starks has to be in that conversation. Now is not the time, but a year from now, I could absolutely see him being the one to take that championship away from MJF. The Dynamite Diamond Ring stuff. I want to comment on that. The Dynamite Diamond Ring stuff came off confusing to me. Because in the promo that he cut, MJF said, next week, I become a four-time Dynamite Diamond Ring champion. Earlier in the night, we heard Tony Schiavone and Excalibur talking about in the Battle Royal that something different they're doing this year is that the winner this time will get to pick and choose when and where they challenge MJF for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. So there's a disconnect there. And if they clarified that later in the show, then I missed it. But they made it sound like, you know, Ricky Starks is going to be able to, like, a Money in the Bank cash and say, okay, I want to challenge MJF for the ring, and I'm going to do it now or on this date. And instead, it sounds like the Diamond Ring and the championship are both up for grabs in the match next week. That's how it came across. So I just thought it came off very, very confusing. I said it last week. I think the ring is it's done. I think it's outlived its usefulness. I don't see the point in keeping it around. It turned into a good gimmick for MJF, using it to take shortcuts and win his matches. And they kind of built it into the tease of whether or not he's going to use it or not in the match with Jon Moxley, and then he used the Nux instead. It served its purpose. I just don't see the need for it anymore. And we'll see. I mean, look, if he's going to go in there against MJF next week and lose, and the ring is on the line, and MJF has the ring for the fourth year in a row, what the fuck is the point? But if he goes in there next week and loses, and then he decides, okay, I'm going to, quote-unquote cash in now, let's say 2 weeks later, and he beats MJF, well, you just pin the world champion. So, again, I don't really understand the point of it, unless the idea is that Starks is going to lose next week. MJF is going to cheat to win. He'll retain his title. Ricky then gets a second match for the ring and wins and gets his win back. But the fact that he pinned MJF is reason now for him to get a rematch, and it turns into a whole series. They end up having three different matches, one for the title, one for the ring, and then one last match to kind of wrap it all up, with MJF going over. Maybe that's what they're going for. Because if he has a separate match with him and pins the champion, then he's got to get a rematch for the championship. You're not going to pin your world champion just to win a fucking ring. That's stupid. Unless they're using the ring as a way for him to then get his rematch. But even if they're doing that, I still think the ring is pointless. I don't see the need to keep it around anymore. Jon Moxley was backstage. The former champion. So next week is for both. One Fall Wrestling in the chat just confirmed. Next week's match is for both. Well, I don't see the point in that. I don't see the point in that. I really don't. So then I guess MJF is keeping the ring for a fourth year. It's for the ring and the title. What is the point? Maybe it'll be made clear next week. As I sit here right now, I don't see the point in that at all. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. December is here. It's the season of giving. And we're not just talking YouTube memberships or Regina D-Wave championship. Oh, Regina D-Wave championship matches. Oh, no. But, you know who you've already given enough to? Your internet service provider. That is, if you haven't already been using ExpressVPN every time that you've gone online this year. Every time you go online without ExpressVPN, your provider like AT&T or Verizon can see and log every single website that you visit. And yes, that includes all the sites that you visit in incognito mode. That's why when I go online, I do so with ExpressVPN. The app encrypts and reroutes all of my network data through their secure servers so my provider can't see a thing. And it couldn't be easier to use. Just fire up ExpressVPN on any of your devices, your phone, your laptop, your tablet. Tap one button to connect, and that's it. You're good to go, and you can browse with peace of mind. Unlike your internet service provider, ExpressVPN is committed to your privacy. Their privacy policy has even been audited by third parties, so you can rest assured that your data is not being logged by anyone. You've given enough to your ISP this year. It's time for you to start taking. So take back your internet privacy today with the VPN rated number one by TechRadar and Mashable. Visit expressvpn.com/solomonster and get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more. Jon Moxley was backstage. And he said that he didn't think last week got out of hand. He was being sarcastic. He and Hangman Page had to be separated multiple times. He said he liked the fact that the cowboy dusted himself off, got back on the saddle, and did his talking with his fists. He said, this is all elite wrestling, not all elite talking. He said, there is no Blackpool Microphone Club. He said, tonight himself, Wheeler, and Claudio are going to go out there. He goes, this Friday on Rampage, they bring back 100-proof ass-kicking wrestling. He's so over with the Jericho Appreciation Society that this is it. This is the finale. After Ring of Honor, final battle this Saturday, no more. No more of the Jericho Appreciation Society against the Blackpool Combat Club. from his lips to Tony Khan's ears. Let it be true. 7 months is long enough. This thing is dragged out now long enough. This needs to be the end. I said, final battle. Keyword being final. This has to be it. The end. It looks like they agree. So he said he would be out there on Saturday, or rather he would be out there tonight to make sure there were no shenanigans in their tag team match. But this Saturday, they end things with the JAS. So then we had Samoa Joe, my second favorite thing on the show tonight, after that promo. Samoa Joe defending his TNT championship against the former champion, the former TNT champion. How many of you remember that Darby Allin once was the TNT champion? It's been so long, I almost forgot. A shout out to Ray Wrighton, joining us tonight, dropping a super chat. Hey, Ashton, what's going on? What do you think? 7 months of the Blackpool Combat Club and the Jericho Appreciation Society. Is this your favorite feud of 2022? Is this going to go down as one of the best gang wars that you've seen in wrestling? Are you excited at the prospect of getting more Jericho Appreciation Society and Blackpool Combat Club? I don't think there's a single person out there who would agree with that statement. So, Joe and Darby, and remember what I said last week. What did I say last week? What was the one thing I said I was looking forward to the most about this match? I said I was looking forward to the inevitable spot where Darby went for his suicide dive, and Samoa Joe very casually walked out of the way and let Darby crash and burn. First 30 seconds of this match, they gave me what I wanted. We got the spot. We got the spot. Darby went for the suicide dive, and Joe very calmly sidestepped him, and Darby crashed and burned on the concrete. He launched himself so fast that he overshot the thin protective mat on the floor and just crashed right on the concrete, right by the barricade. And that looked like it absolutely sucked. It looked like as he laid there on the floor, he was reevaluating in his head some of the life choices that he's made. He'll be reevaluating those life choices in about 10 years when he's crippled in a wheelchair. But we all have to make mistakes in life, right? Sometimes that's the only way to learn in life. You've got to make mistakes. You'll pay the price for it later on, but you can't blame anybody but yourself. That's going to be Darby Allin. But I love that spot. Anytime Joe just casually steps out of the way, I love it. He's been doing that for years. I love that spot. So Joe smashed, he picked Darby up, and he like is swinging him around. He smashes him into the barricade. He smashes him into the ring apron, back into the barricade. He's throwing him around like nothing. Joe then peeled off some of the protective padding on the floor. He picked it up to expose the concrete underneath. He picked Darby up for a powerbomb. And Darby slipped out. Joe, though, ended up catching him with a snap power slam on the concrete. You could hear the thud. You can hear the thud as his body smacked the pavement. Darby is not going to have a very pleasant morning when he wakes up tomorrow. So Joe continued to murder Darby through the picture-in-picture. When they came back live, Darby was on the apron, and Joe ran him headfirst into the ring post. They went like running together, and he smashes Darby into the ring post. Darby, his whole body twists in midair as he plummets off the apron and crashes back down to the floor. And he was out. And Doc Samson came over to check on him. And he looked like he was out. The referee started to count. Darby eventually made it back into the ring. He started to mount a comeback. Joe hit a Manhattan drop and the running senton for a near fall. So Darby, he managed to get Joe out to the floor because Joe was teasing a dive, right? We've seen Joe do dives where he comes out with the running forearm, right? So he was teasing a dive. And Darby sidestepped him and Joe, you know, he didn't crash and burn, but he went through the ropes. He landed on his feet on the floor. So now Joe's on the floor. Darby climbs up to the top rope and he does a coffin drop, does the truss fall backwards and collides with Joe, and he takes Joe down to the ground. Back inside, Darby hit the over-the-top stunner that he does. He followed that with a code red, got a close near fall. He was a split second away from winning, right? People thought he had it. Darby charged into the corner. Joe took him down with the STO. He put Darby on the top rope. Looked like maybe he was going to set up for an Avalanche muscle buster. Darby bit him on the face. Joe fell down. And Darby hit the coffin drop. This is now we've seen this spot done before. I feel like we've seen this spot done a few times before. This is maybe the best I've ever seen this spot done as far as like the fluid motion. Because we've seen in other matches as well, not just with Darby, where somebody will come off the top rope and the person laying on the ground will catch them for a submission hold, an arm bar, whatever it might be. And sometimes it just looks wonky. You can't really do it in one fluid motion. It doesn't look great. This looked great. Darby came off, right? Falls backwards for the coffin drop. And Joe catches him from his back. He catches Darby and locks on the coquina clutch. Darby was fading fast. He was trying to fight it. There's no fighting it. He was D-O-N-E done. And the referee called for the bell. Samoa Joe retains his TNT championship. After the match, Darby gets up and he gives Joe a shove. And you can see Darby mouths to him, "I'm still standing." Not for long, he wasn't. Joe gave him a headbutt. Down went Darby. And Joe went and he grabbed Darby's skateboard. And he places the skateboard down on the mat in the middle of the ring, upside down, with the wheels facing up. Now, I thought that Wardlow or somebody was going to come out and make the save here. But no. They did make the save eventually. But they didn't make the save here. They let Darby suffer a little bit more. Darby doesn't have too many friends other than Sting, I guess. But he sets the skateboard down, wheels up, and Joe delivers a muscle buster on top of the skateboard. Brutal. Just a brutal spot. So Joe sits him up. He places him back in the sleeper hold. The referee is, he won't let go of the hold. So the referee is summoning help from the back, trying to get somebody to come out here and get this guy off him. Wardlow's music finally hits. Finally. Maybe this guy was in the back taking a shit. I don't know what took him so long. Darby just had his spine broken. But now Wardlow decides, I think I've seen enough now. Now it's time for me to come out and make the save. And he comes out and he chases Joe away. But my favorite part of this. Wardlow is coming down to the ring to make the save. And I love Taz on commentary. Taz is great. Taz is great. I say it from time to time, but it bears repeating, especially like in the main event, for example. I don't want to get ahead, but there was a Spike Piledriver spot in the main event. And so he's saying, "Oh, I hate seeing that. That's so bad. I broke my neck back in 95 on a Spike Piledriver. That's such a dangerous maneuver." So dangerous that he immediately kicked out of it. But that's beside the point. But I love Taz's commentary. I just wanted to mention that. So that being said, Taz sees Wardlow coming down to the ring, and he called Wardlow the Warlord by accident as he was running down to the ring. The Warlord, first of all, the Warlord has probably a good 50 to 60 pounds on Wardlow. As big as Wardlow is, the Warlord is much bigger, filled with copious amounts of steroids. So I haven't heard the Warlord's name mentioned in quite some time, but yes. Now whenever I see Wardlow, all I'm going to think of is the Warlord. Wardlow's a big guy. How he achieved his physique, I think he looks natural, but who knows, right? There's nothing natural about the Warlord. Absolutely nothing. Nothing natural about the Warlord. You know what the cool thing is about the Warlord, though? Anytime I have seen a shoot interview with him, and he's done a few of them, he comes across like the nicest guy. And I think he's been pretty open about things before. And I mean, just the fact that he's still alive when so many of those guys are no longer here and their hearts exploded, it's kind of cool that the Warlord is still around. So I have love for the Warlord. The Warlord was one of those guys when I was a young wrestling fan. I remember the Warlord. The Warlord never moved that fast. No, he did not. The Warlord never moved that fast. That is true. This was an excellent match. This was a return to form for the TNT Championship. For the first time in a long time, the TNT title felt special here in this match. And that was the best that Samoa Joe has looked in years. And here's a guy who has been befallen by injuries and just bad luck. And it has really been a very long time since we've seen this version of Samoa Joe. He went in there He steamrolled Darby. He looked like the Joe of old out there. He looked like a killer in a way that we haven't seen in years. And now we're getting to see him more on television. We got him tonight. He's going to defend the TV title against Juice Robinson at Final Battle this Saturday. So I thought that this was fantastic. And Darby really was the perfect opponent for him, right? He could just bump around and sell his ass off and just take all the punishment, make Joe look like a just like a fucking final boss out there. You know, Joe's out there, he's flexing. Like when Earthquake used to flex. Earthquake had no biceps. His biceps were in his belly. But he would stand there and he would pose, and it got him great heat, right? Because it's like he's posing like he's Rick Rude out there. And there's Joe out there. He's posing as Darby is basically unconscious outside the ring. I loved it. I thought it was great. And Darby, look, Darby's an idiot for taking the kind of bumps that he takes, but you're not going to tell him otherwise. When Darby went into the Owen Hart match against Jeff Hardy, remember him? He went into the match with Jeff Hardy, who was like his dream opponent, and he said that he knew, he wanted one of them to come out of that match. Or maybe he didn't want it, but he knew that he was coming out of the match and going straight to the hospital. It was almost like, I don't think he went to the hospital, but it was almost like he was disappointed that he didn't go to the hospital. If you remember that ridiculous ladder spot that he did, I'm surprised he didn't. I'm surprised that he's still not out injured from that spot. Off the top of the ladder, down onto Jeff on the chairs outside the ring. This guy has a death wish. One of these days, he may get his wish. Hopefully, I don't have to see it on television. But he takes a beating like nobody else, I'll say that. He takes a beating like nobody that I have seen since Mick Foley. Go ask Mick Foley if he regrets a lot of the bumps that he took. Because now, he's starting to really pay the price for it. I don't think Darby is going to have to wait that long to start paying the price for it. So Tony Schiavone was in the back with Orange Cassidy, the All-Atlantic champion. Kip Sabian was there. He said Cassidy wanted to talk to Kip Sabian. He told Kip that if he wanted a shot at the All-Atlantic Championship, all he had to do was ask. And Sabian complained that Cassidy waited for him to be attacked by Dustin Rhodes in the Battle Royal, that is, so that he wouldn't be at his best. Cassidy said, well, if you won't fight me for the title, you can go find somebody who will. So Cassidy is going to defend his title on Rampage this Friday against the person of Kip Sabian's choosing. Now, I can think of one person who has not been seen on AEW television in quite some time, who evidently Tony Khan has no creative plans for. I could think of something. How about Miro? How about we see Miro, who, by the way, was in the All-Atlantic Championship match to crown a new champion at Forbidden Door and did not win. How about him? How about Miro as the All-Atlantic champion? How about that? Just a suggestion. I would love for him to pick Miro. I know Miro's the man who broke his arm way back when. Remember when Miro broke Kip Sabian's arm a million years ago? Feels like a lifetime ago at this point. I would like to see Miro get the spot. On that note, let's stay on the subject of Miro here for a second. Per Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful Select, Miro is not injured. The reason that we have not seen Miro on AEW television is very simple. Creative simply has not had anything for him. How many times have we heard that with WWE? Creative has nothing for you. Creative has nothing for you. How do you not have something for Miro after all this time? You look at some of the people who have stories on television. How do they have a story and Miro doesn't? Because I figure Miro, I don't think he's hurt. You have Lana doing interviews talking about, you know, leaving cryptic comments and stuff. If he was hurt, they would say he's hurt. He's not hurt. He's not off filming movies. He's at home playing video games. Creative has nothing for it. The story says, after inquiring with AEW sources, it was reiterated to us that the former TNT champion is and has been completely healthy and wanting to actively compete. He wants to compete. However, we are told that creative simply has not been presented for it. Miro last appeared at All Out, and before that, Forbidden Door. He's only... Now get this. This is amazing to me. Keep in mind that he's not hurt, right? Listen to this. I didn't realize that it was this low of a number. Miro has wrestled 4 matches all year, and they all came from the period of June through September. Now, I know at the beginning of the year he was filming a TV part, right? But that was then. 4 matches the entire year, and he's not hurt. Says, we're told that there were plans to have creative conversations with him, but those have not happened as of yet. Those we have spoken with to say that Miro is eager to return to the ring. Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet he's very eager to get back in the ring. He left WWE to go prove himself somewhere else. It's kind of hard to do that when you're sitting on your ass at home for most of the year. So if they don't have any thing for the guy creatively, I just gave you an idea. There you go. You're welcome. Free of charge. Big Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta against Jake Hager and Daniel Garcia. Tag team match. Hager pulled a purple hat out of his pocket. There's that stupid bucket hat. And he tossed it to Claudio. He teased putting it on, but then he punted it into the crowd instead. And a little bit later on, Claudio gave old Big Hager a giant swing, about 10 revolutions or so. Got a deep 2 count after knocking him down with a clothesline. This is also your weekly reminder that Rick Knox is absolutely terrible at his job. The worst referee in all of wrestling. Whether that's his gimmick or he just truly is that bad at his job, I haven't figured that part out yet. I'm going to say he's just that bad at his job. He may be a nice guy, but he is a terrible referee. So Rick Knox is in the ring, and he just stands there while Sammy Guevara gets up on the apron when Claudio is hitting the middle rope for some kind of springboard move. We've seen him come off and do a springboard forearm, so that's probably what he was going for. So Claudio is setting up for the springboard move off the ropes. And Guevara gets on the apron and holds his hand so he can't move. In the background is Rick Knox, and he's just standing there, and he's watching. He's just watching. It's like he morphed into a fan. So Guevara is holding Claudio. Claudio can't move. Now, John Moxley is out there, right? Because Moxley said, I'm going to be out there tonight to make sure there's no shenanigans. Well, there's plenty of shenanigans, and you can't count on Rick Knox to do anything about it. So here comes John Moxley, and he trips Sammy off the apron and then punches him. Hager gets Claudio in the ankle lock. At the same time, Daniel Garcia puts Wheeler Yuta in the Dragon Tamer. So we have stereo submissions here. Claudio rolls through. He rolls out of the ankle lock. And the momentum sends Hager crashing into Daniel Garcia, which breaks up that submission. When Hager turns around, he gets caught with an uppercut, and Claudio pins him. So this was a very standard tag team match. It was designed to give Claudio a win going into his Ring of Honor World title match against Chris Jericho on Saturday. So to that end, they did what they, you know, planned to do there, but there was really nothing special about this match at all. Tony Schiavone got into the ring after the match was over and said that he had footage of an interview that he wanted the members of the Blackpool Combat Club to see, that it was very important for them to see this. This was an interview that he did 2 weeks ago with his very good friend William Regal before he was attacked by MJF, but after Full Gear. So it was probably that day at Dynamite before the attack by MJF that he interviewed William Regal. Regal, in the interview, said that people will only see this interview if something bad happens to him. And he says, you always have to expect that something bad is going to happen to you. He took exception to what MJF did to Tony Schiavone when he attacked Tony. I think that was back at Grand Slam. And he said that, you know, MJF is going around and he's complaining about emails and stuff from the past. So he gave MJF what he wanted. Helped him out. Gave him the brass knucks. MJF now is the world heavyweight champion. He got what he wanted. He got what he dreamed of. But now everybody is going to be chasing after MJF. MJF now has a target on his back. He realized several months ago that the 3 members of the Blackpool Combat Club, they don't need him around anymore. But he also realized that they would not let him go. He needed to show them why they don't need him. and why they can teach young Wheeler to be the best in the world. He says, you have to lead by example, though. Hopefully Moxley understands, as he's a calculating man, just like he is, the reason that he did what he did. This was the big explanation. The reason that he did what he did at Full Gear was to teach the final thing that he could ever teach. Always stay one step ahead and keep eyes in the back of your head. That rhymes. Regal could be a poet. He is the Blackpool Combat Club, he says, until the day he dies. Right? Regal is going to be BCC until the day that he dies. BCC until the day he RIPs. And he said that it's been emotional before he walks off camera. So cut back live to the ring. Moxley, Claudio, Yuta, they all have these confused looks on their faces by what they just heard. Moxley gets all fired up. He says all he knows for sure is one thing. The three men in the ring live and breathe for the sport of professional wrestling. He said December 10th, at Final Battle, Ring of Honor, this war with the Jericho Appreciation Society is over. He says, these men are going to make a statement. This Friday night on Rampage, he makes a statement. He says he's going to challenge any wrestler in the world to get in the ring with him to find out where they stand on the food chain. Pro wrestling is about to make a serious statement. He was all fired up as this promo came to an end. The man that Moxley, by the way, is going to be wrestling on Friday, it was announced later on, is Konosuke Takeshita, who is All Elite. He's living in the U.S. now. I saw there was, a tweet from Takeshita the other day that he was, he was having a rough night. He was in his new apartment. He didn't have any electricity or lights or anything. He was sleeping on a mattress. He's new to America now. He's trying to start a new life for himself here. He's all in. No more of this going back and forth to the U.S. and Japan. No, he's here. He's All Elite now. So hopefully in 2023, we get to see more of Takeshita. So we'll see him against Moxley on Rampage on Friday night. As far as the Regal explanation goes, Regal wanted to leave. Tony Khan did not want William Regal to leave, but it was his choice. And Tony Khan decided to give William Regal what he wanted. He tried to come up with some sort of explanation for things to tie things up on the way out. I thought that it was as good as can be expected, given what the circumstances were, what they did here. Regal put everybody over that he possibly could. If you think about his exit from AEW, William Regal put all of them over on his way out. William Regal was the epitome of professional on his way out of this company. And that's why, you know, when I heard the stuff about, you know, EC3 talking about, you know, from the moment he came into the company, Regal was telling people, you know, these people don't know what they're doing in management. They're so this and that. And I can't say what's in William Regal's head and what he saw and what he's going to go back to WWE now and tell Triple H when he gives him the status report on Tony Khan. Is it possible that he thought some of those things? Yes. Am I going to get my William Regal news from fucking Vince Russo at EC3? Fucking no. William Regal, every step of the way, handled himself in a professional way. There were wrestlers who came forward and said that he was always by the ring. He was sometimes in the stands when the arena was empty before a show, hours before a show, sitting with people, talking to them, mentoring them, giving them advice, telling them. He joked one day with some people, make friends with the camera guys. Make friends with the camera guys because those are the guys that are going to make you look good when you're on TV. So he was there. He was giving advice to people. He was deeply involved on television. He was doing color commentary. He did have this, you know, bizarre love affair with Excalibur, and I'm sure he's going to miss his lover very deeply, the man in the mask, right? So he did a lot of things in a very short period of time that he was in AEW, but every step of the way he handled himself, including on his way out, like a pro. He went to Tony Khan and said, can we talk? And they had a conversation. He explained why he wanted to leave. He did business on the way out. Right, he didn't cause any headaches or problems, and they wanted to do the angle with MJF. He put MJF over. He put MJF over as the biggest heel in the entire company by letting him get bashed in the back of the head with a pair of brass knucks, and he went out on his back, on a backboard with a neck brace on, in an ambulance taken to the hospital. He didn't go out with heat on himself. He didn't just disappear one day without tying up loose ends. He went out by putting over MJF, and he went out by putting over every single member of the Blackpool Combat Club, right down to Wheeler fucking Yuta. So I think they handled this in the best way that they could have. I think that you can't ask for anything more. You cannot ask for anything more than what they did here and what Regal did on his way out. He will be missed. I'm going to miss having Regal on TV. Now we're not going to get him on TV for at least another year, right? He's going to go back to WWE, and it's not like he's going to be a GM or anything. He's not going to be allowed to be on TV. So I will miss not having William Regal on TV. He was the best general manager in that company in the last 15 years because he was on NXT when he had to be. He wasn't overbearing on television, right? I mean, towards the end there, he was making more frequent appearances like in backstage segments and stuff when he was the GM. But, you know, again, he wasn't obnoxious on television like, oh, I'm so sick of seeing this guy. He was the perfect GM for them. And in AEW, I liked the pairing with the Blackpool Combat Club. There was a lot of untapped potential there. They could have done more with it. But I think for the brief period of time, it was in 9 months or so, that he spent in this company, I enjoyed seeing him there, even if it was just for 9 months, and he will be missed. So we had a taped Malakai Black promo talking about how AEW has allowed itself to be corrupted, and it's time for the House of Black to put down this corruption. Julia Hart came in and said the crime, because he asked each one of them, he goes, Julia, what's the crime? And then Julia Hart showed up and said, the crime is treason. Said, Buddy, what's the verdict? And Buddy Matthews showed up and said, the verdict is war. Said, Brody, what is the sentence? And Brody King came in. He said, it's as if you throw a side of beef to a pack of wild dogs. They will tear the meat from the bones. He said, the sentence is extermination. Malakai said that so it has been decided. Anyone who has an issue with what they've done over the past 2 weeks, next Wednesday, come one, come all. And the House of Black will be back in action on Dynamite. Winter is coming next week. Back from the break, Tony Schiavone sat down with the new AEW World Women's Champion, Jamie Hayter, who was very upset, by the way. Everybody, all these other champions have been interviewed, and nobody wants to talk to her. Just about time that you sat down with me and talked to me. So he asked her about the women's division. She said, unfortunately for everybody else, she's the one with the championship. She's going to have... we're close to 500, I see. Close to 500 likes. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Fuck that. Let's do 550. She said, unfortunately for... For everyone else, she has the title. She's going to have a very close eye on the Regina D-Wave championship match on Rampage this Friday between Hikaru Shida and The Bunny. She said whoever wins that match, they will get to wrestle her for the AEW Women's Championship. So there you go. For those who don't know, Hikaru Shida is defending her Regina D-Wave championship, everybody, on Rampage this Friday against The Bunny. There you go. How many of you in this chat are even aware of what the Regina D-Wave championship is? Because you're getting it on Friday night on Rampage. I'm sure it's a very nice belt. And I will not corpse this time. I got it out of my system on the Sunday show. Want to hear me corpse? You go back and listen to my Rampage review. I did a Rampage review on Sunday. And that's only what you heard. That's not even all of it, because I had to stop the recording for a second. But I'm all good now. No corpsing here. So we had a trios grudge match. Jade Cargill, Red Velvet, and Layla Gray against the former baddie Kiara Hogan with Madison Rayne and Sky Blue. Jade was going to start the match. And she saw Sky Blue across the ring. And I guess she thought, well... What the fuck? I mean, I'm not getting in the ring with her. She's not worthy of my time. So she went over and she tagged Red Velvet into the match. So she started instead. There was an awkward spot here with Red Velvet and Sky Blue. It seemed like Sky Blue didn't really know what she was doing or forgot something. I don't know what happened here. But It led to a double super kick. They were both knocked down. Jade and Hogan tagged into the match. Hogan landed a shotgun dropkick, tossed Gray and Velvet out of the ring. Jay delivered a chokeslam to Kiera Hogan. Hogan spun out of a jaded attempt, tagged in Madison Rayne, who tried for a ripcord, but Cargill countered into the jaded and got the win. Nothing special about the match. Jade came in here at the end. She picked the bones, let everybody else do the work. Very interesting that Kiera Hogan tagged out and let Madison Rayne take the fall. She didn't take the loss herself, I assume, because they're probably going to want to set up for a TBS title match soon with Jade Cargill and Kiera Hogan. That's why she didn't take the pin. And nothing new on our friend Bow Wow. Oh, my God. I'm devastated. I mean, I was waiting all week for the follow-up to that promo last week from Bow Wow up on the big screen. You know, we talked about see you soon, and all week I'm waiting, man. I can't wait for Bow Wow, man. Bow Wow Wednesday. I'm waiting for this show tonight. No Bow Wow. What's up with that? No Bow Wow. Are they saving Bow Wow for Winter is Coming next week? I don't know. I thought when the match was over, we were going to get another promo. We didn't get anything. Maybe Bow Wow was going to come out and give us a live concert. Like that Kiss concert we got once on WCW Nitro back in the day. There's no Bow Wow. No Bow Wow. So backstage, Tony Schiavone interviewed Saraya, who was with Bow Wow. No, she wasn't. Britt Baker immediately interrupted and congratulated Saraya on her win at Full Gear and said that it would never happen again. She handed Saraya a pair of tickets for Dynamite on January 11th at the Kia Forum in LA. And she said that you have two options. You could watch me be a star from the front row, or you can get back in the ring that night. And Saraya said, I would love to get back in the ring and beat you again. And then Britt Baker had to clarify and say, no. This time it would be a tag team match. Jamie Hayter is the AEW Women's World Champion. It would be me and Jamie against you, and you'll have to find a partner. And Saraya accepted, and so Saraya is going to have to find a tag team partner for this big show in LA against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. And so let the speculation begin. Because I know the first person people are going to be talking about, oh, it's happening. It's really happening. Saraya is going to be tag team partners with the woman who kicked her into retirement 5 years ago. And eventually they're going to feud and they're going to have a match. Mercedes is not coming to AEW. Sasha Banks is not coming to AEW. My money is on Toni Storm. She would be the obvious one for the spot. If Thunder Rosa is physically ready and cleared by then, it could be Thunder Rosa. The way that she's been talking, unless she's just trying to throw us off, I wouldn't think she would be ready in time, but it could just be that. It could be that she's trying to throw us off the scent. So it could be Thunder Rosa, but it's either Toni Storm or Thunder Rosa. But that will not stop people from wondering if it's Sasha Banks. This is all we're going to hear about for the next 4 weeks. Unless Sasha shows up on WWE television in the next 4 weeks, which she isn't, this is all we're going to hear about now. The main event was for the AEW Tag Team Championship. It was the Acclaim defending their titles against the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, the AAA Tag Team Champions, the New Japan IWGP Tag Team Champions, the former AEW Tag Team Champions, the former Raw Tag Team Champions, FTR. FTR, who were very upset that the Usos were anointed as the best tag team of the year by some magazine. What magazine was it? Was it PWI? I don't know. Some magazine said that the Usos were the number one tag team in 2022. And they got all pissy about it. Gives a shit. The only award that matters is the one that I give out at the end of the year. That's what matters. So FTR in the main event for a change. That was nice. That was a welcome change. Instead of the Elite in the main event, we had FTR in the main event. Instead of the Young Bucks, we had Dax and Cash. So there was a spot early on in the match where the Acclaimed applied stereo sharpshooters to both members of FTR, just rubbing salt in the wound, right? Sharpshooter of all things. So they made the ropes. They got out of it. They spilled outside. Anthony Bowens got sent into the ring post. Dax and Cash got Max, Max. It's like, what's his name? Max Caster, head first, underneath the ring, and they gave him a catapult. So they catapulted him up, and his face went up into the steel beams under the ring. That took us into the final picture-in-picture break. They worked over Caster the entire break. Out of the break, Caster got a back body drop on Dax, made the hot tag to Anthony Bowens. He landed a rocker dropper on Cash Wheeler. Harwood fired back with a series of German suplexes. Bowens was able to stop a third suplex and rolled up Harwood for a two count. There was the spike pile driver spot that I mentioned earlier. Took place here. FTR gave a spike pile driver to Anthony Bowens just for a near fall. I hate that the spike pile driver has been reduced to that, but there are a lot of moves that used to be finishes back in the day that no longer are finishes. FTR set up for a double team vertical suplex. Caster, though, broke it up with a spear. Bowens then rolled Harwood up for a near fall. So FTR hit the big rig to Max Caster, but Anthony Bowens broke the pin up at the very last second and made the save. Hey, shout out to JM in the chat dropping a $50 super chat drop. Says he was only able to catch the main event tonight. Appreciate your recap. But it sounds more so like you watched Cactus Jack against Big Van Vader instead of Darby against Joe. Hey, Cactus Jack and Big Van Vader had some pretty fucking great matches. They were brutal as all hell. But that was only because Mick Foley told Vader to like bust him up for real because he's out of his mind. Don't be talking down on those matches. Those are some great matches there. But JM, thank you for the $50 bomb. Here on a Wednesday night. We had a hell of a night last Wednesday. Last Wednesday was like one big fucking party. So I'm glad to see a lot of the same faces back here tonight. So thank you, JM. So Caster set up for his mic drop elbow off the top. Wheeler moved out of the way. He landed three straight lariats at a powerbomb. Caster reversed Wheeler's jackknife pin attempt off the powerbomb because he went for a jackknife pin, but he reversed it into a pin of his own. And he managed to basically steal the win. He got this flash pin. A win is a win. And the Acclaimed retained their tag team titles. So a very good main event. And it was nice to see a clean win. But a fluke finish. So it leaves the door open, even if just a crack, for FTR to come back and challenge them again for the championships at some point in the future. One thing to note, and it may be nothing, it could have just been from some chops that were delivered, but Anthony Bowens, his pec, I think it was his left pec, was all bruised and purple. So hopefully he didn't tear anything. All of a sudden, the Gun Boys appeared up on the Tron. We have like a minute left in the show. And in the final minute of the show, we have Austin and Colton Gunn. And they pop up and they've got Christmas stockings and they said they had some Christmas presents for FTR. They pull out a card, and they turn it around. They say, it's from the Briscoes. It's from Dem Boys. And then they pull out two dog collars from their stockings, and they said, final battle, double dog collar match. And FTR, they hugged each other in the ring. The show went off the air. And all I could think is, well, that came out of nowhere. In the last 60 seconds of the show, the final dynamite before final battle, they just kind of throw that out there. Oh, by the way, we're going to have Briscoes and FTR Part 3 on pay-per-view this Saturday. And as I said at the beginning, Warner hates the Briscoes so much that we had the Gun Boys, the Ass Boys, come out and cut their promo for them because they couldn't do it themselves, which I think is ridiculous. But that is one way to make the pay-per-view on Saturday much more must-see. Two of the best matches of the entire year came from these two teams. Now we get to see if they can three-peat and do it again on Saturday. I have great faith that they will do so. I'm calling a Briscoes tag team title match the weekend after this weekend. They're going to be defending their House of Glory tag team titles December 17th. But they're going to try to win the Ring of Honor tag team titles back this coming Saturday. I think those ROH belts are coming off FTR. I just cannot imagine the Briscoes losing three straight in the same year to FTR. And they're Ring of Honor exclusive. FTR is not Ring of Honor exclusive. The Briscoes are. And where do you go from here? if they lose three straight times, what do you do with the Briscoes in Ring of Honor? You can't bring them in AEW, right? That's been well established. They couldn't even cut a fucking promo on the show tonight. So they have to win. I just don't see how they can lose three straight. So I think those ROH belts are finally coming off FTR this weekend. It's not a slam dunk. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's just that's how I feel. I think we're going to get a title change there. Winter is coming next Wednesday. Big episode of Dynamite. We've got the House of Black back in action, back in black. We've got match number four. I know you're all waiting for match number four in the Best of Seven series between Death Triangle and the Elite. Carry on, my wayward son. They will be back next week. Death Triangle is up 2-1. And MJF defends the AEW World Championship against Ricky Starks. I am looking forward to that. Way more so than the Best of Seven match or anything else on the show next week. I am looking forward to Ricky Starks and MJF. And MJF, you know, MJF does not wrestle very often, period. So that we're even getting a match from him on TV, that's rare in and of itself. But I cannot wait to see that match. Let's take a look at the poll. See what we got here. AEW Dynamite tonight, 78.2% thumbs up. So nearly 80% of you have given this show a thumbs up. 12% thumbs in the middle and less than 10% thumbs down. This was an excellent show. This was the best episode of Dynamite that I have seen in a very long time. Hot crowd, some good action. You know, again, I talked about Darby and Joe. I talked about the promo segment. Very good main event tag team title match. Way more good stuff than not on this show. You love to see it. I love me a good rebound edition of Dynamite, especially after that episode of Raw from Monday night. Raw has, I don't know what has happened to Raw. Raw has fallen off a fucking cliff the last few weeks. Hopefully they can find their footing. But Dynamite tonight did just that. All right, let's go through your super chats here. We had some big ones come in, but we'll get to those. And I see that you guys crushed the goal tonight. Wow, holy shit, look at this. We are closing in on 550. You guys may not let me down. 550 likes, I think that's doable. Let's do it. We're going to be doing Be the Booker in a little bit. Be Calm, See Clearly said, I got COVID again the second time. As I said to you in the chat, I'm sorry to hear that. Get well soon. I know a couple of people who got it three times, and one of them is still dealing with some pretty bad shit, and it's been 7 months. So hopefully that will not happen to you. Hopefully you'll get back up on your feet very soon. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, so are we calling them the Performance Center Combat Club from now on? No, I think Moxley's, I like the name that Moxley threw out there, the Blackpool Microphone Club. I think that should be their new name. We've got Food Hive. It says, admit it, Hager got that stupid hat over. One and only, $4.99 super chat. Finally, someone mentions the mole on MJF's neck. Ricky Starks, future champion, just not next week. Much love, Solomonster. Much love to you as well. Food Hive says, the women have been featured a lot with a lot of TV time with more storylines, not just around the belts. Moving in the right direction is AEW. Well, that's something that they've had to work on, you know, and I still don't think it's great, but, you know, you can have more than just a storyline based around the championship. That's been a complaint that I think some of the AEW women have also levied and would agree with. And, you know, taking steps to remedy that is something that they have, I guess, tried to do, and hopefully they'll do more of that in the future. Old Dirty Sausage with the $5 super chat. If you look close enough, Ricky literally speared MJF out of his shoes tonight. I did notice that. Yes, it was on the spear spot, but MJF was taken out of his shoes at the end of that segment. Emiliana, 1999 Super Chat. Emiliana, I just sent an email back to you earlier. Missed last week's stream, but I'm here now to say yay. Hangman is back. Hopefully we get to see him on Rampage after Moxley's match with Takeshita, which will surely be a banger. Have a great stream. Don't let the party stop. Oh, I'm trying to keep the party going here. And one person who is keeping the party going here is JM, who just dropped another $50 super chat bomb. Yes, 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 yes. JM, you're a beast. I'll get to yours in a minute. Andy VR Omni with the $4.99. There it is. Right on my screen. There it is. JM coming in hot. The party never stops. Not on YouTube, it doesn't. It says, whenever I see Hager, I think of when Guevara had the gall to call Andrade a favor hire. When that motherfucker Hager is still showing his mug on Dynamite. Yeah, if ever there was a favor hire, I mean, there you go. Anti-M-Bishop07, $5 Super Chat. Evening, Solomonster. Great Dynamite tonight. Can't wait for Hog next weekend. Hit that like, subscribe, and join. Ending 2022 with a bang. Yeah, Hog's going to be great. Not this Saturday, but next Saturday. We got Kenta coming in against Low Ki. We have not seen that match in 17 years. And when that match happened back in Ring of Honor in 2005, it was a big deal. And this is the first time they're in the ring together again, one-on-one since then. So I get to call that match. I'm very excited about that. Brumakian Productions. With each change he makes to WWE, I am imagining Triple H is saying, fuck you, Vince. I would not be surprised if it became the World Wrestling Federation again. Well, it is not going to become the World Wrestling Federation again. Do not hold your breath waiting for that. Food Hive says, I love you. Your strength helps me. You're sucking up to me for some reason. What do you want? What do you want? You want something. He doesn't suck up to me unless he wants something. I want to know what it is. You want my family's noodle pudding recipe. Uh-huh, you're not getting it. But I love you too, brother. Nick Grosso, prayers to Barry Windham. Hope he pulls through and rest in peace, Kirstie Alley. Yeah, Barry Windham is in the ICU still. No update on him, which is kind of scary. But he had a massive heart attack. And, you know, back in the day, hell of an athlete. Former world heavyweight champion. Didn't win the title until I think it was 93. But you could have put the world title on him back in the late 80s, and I think he would have been over as a huge star. MattView72, I literally told my friend, watch Ricky Cook, and yet I still underestimated how great he was going to be in that promo, an absolute star. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see him have the chance to go out there and shine like that on the mic. The key is in the follow-up. Right, he's gonna lose, but let's see what they do next week. This diamond ring nonsense, I think, is just stupid. But even coming out of the loss, you know, he goes into that match, has a great showing, gets screwed. Right, let's say MJF wins. You got to keep the momentum going. How do you do that? How do you keep the momentum going? I was almost gonna say Samoa Joe, something with Joe and Ricky, but you know, clearly they're heading back to Samoa Joe and Wardlow. They got to come up with something for him to do coming out of the MJF. He cannot just be forgotten and go back on the back burner, which is what's happened with Powerhouse Hobbs. They can't let that happen with Ricky Starks. You've got to keep heating him up, keep the momentum going, because you've got a real star in your hands and not an ex-WWE star. This is a guy that you can say, hey, he's one of ours, right? We've helped make him a star. He's one of our young pillars of this company. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, Green World Order for life, brother. Ray Wrighton, MJF has met his match in Ricky Starks. I hate that Ricky is not winning and is basically being fed to MJF. Well, he is being fed as his first challenger, but again, let's see what they do coming out of this. I want to see them do something with Ricky also, but I don't know. We'll see what Tony Khan does. Ice cream for more. I see what you did there. Hope all is well, Solomon, sir. All is very well. All is very well. We've got a special feature coming up that you guys have not seen on the channel in a very long time. I can't tell you when it's going to be up. It may be a few more weeks, but I know it's something people have been waiting for a long time. You're going to enjoy it. I promise. I can't wait to upload it for you all. French Fry Slut. $5 Super Chat. Got news yesterday that my boyfriend and best friend are facing each other in a match next month in Austin, Texas. I am so excited. Well, I hope that they have a crowd like the crowd that AEW had tonight in Austin, Texas. That's awesome. I thought you were going to tell me that your boyfriend and your best friend are going to be in one of those Dana White slap fights that we saw commercials for on TV tonight. I could think of a few people I would like to slap in the face. You know one person who I don't want to slap in the face? Dr. Dakota Scorpio, who just gifted another channel membership, this time to Lance Dominguez. In the live chat. So thank you to Dr. Dakota and welcome Lance as a channel member. You know, all these new channel members that have been gifted memberships. And shout out to the ones who actually got their own memberships tonight. You guys are the real deal. But I hope at the end of the month, I think these are for 30 days. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think when you're gifted a membership, it's only good for a month. But hopefully at the end of that month, you'll all stick around. I hope. Dre Hund, $2 Super Chat. What happened to Hook? Good question. I guess they realized that Hook needed a little more seasoning. Because all of a sudden, he has disappeared. Bob the Builder, AEW goes to Winnipeg in March. Very excited. Well, I already know who's going to be in the main event on that show. Jay Patterson. $5 Super Chat. Who turns Yuta or Claudio after we just watched Regal's video eulogy? I don't think either one of them have to turn, but if one of them was to, it would probably be Claudio. Here's the thing. If Yuta turns, nobody cares. If Yuta turns, nobody is going to care. Somebody like Claudio turning, people would probably care about it. But I don't see how either one of them needs to turn right now. I don't think either one needs to. Ice cream for more. About to make Solomonster corpse like it's a morgue. Thank you, brother. Boy, you've got away with words, I'll say that. Jay Patterson with the $2 Super Chat. How about that Sheeta and the Gloria Estefan belt? No, it's the Regina D. Wave Championship. The Regina D. Wave. You gotta do the wave when you say it. The Regina D. Wave Championship. JM with the first of two $50 Super Chats. Thank you again, JM. You are the man. Lance says he is pumped to be a channel member. Well, Lance, you've got a badge next to your name now. You're like Sheriff Austin when he had a badge. And you can start rocking some of those emojis in the chat. King Bling Blah, should Max Caster make a music album? That's up to Max Caster. I don't really care one way or the other. Joseph Brooks, whose world title reign was more surprising, not because of who it was, but because of how long they were in the company when they finally got their first run? Kofi Kingston or Mark Henry? Mark Henry, by far, because Kofi Kingston, I never thought Kofi Kingston would be WWE champion. So, him becoming champion, it was completely unexpected that he would get over when he did the way that he did. Mark Henry being this monster of a man, I would have expected he would have been champion long before 2011. He was in the when he became champion in 2011 for the first time, and that Hall of Pain, you know, run that he had until he got hurt was great. He was fucking awesome. he had been in the company, let's see, he signed in 1996, so do the math on that. I mean, was it 15 years before he won his first world championship? So to me, that was more surprising than anything. Dr. Dakota, the good doctor, is back again. He just gifted another membership to Jay. I almost said he gifted one to himself. Jay Baker is now a channel member. You know, you were getting us we might have broken the record tonight. I'm not sure, but I know we were getting very close to 400. And we might be, if we're not there, we're very close, which is a record here for the channel. So thank you guys. Dre Hund has been a member for 3 months. Shout out to Dre Hund. It's a shame that Shelton Benjamin is on jobber status. He is one of my favorite wrestlers. Well, still holding out hope that we might get the Hurt Business reunion at some point that Bobby Lashley has said he wants. JM with the second $50 super chat says, oh, I wasn't talking down on those matches. I love them. I was comparing Darby's love for hitting the concrete to cactus. Somewhere in the timeline, young JM is still staring at his WWF programming, wondering what they did to Vader. Well, it wasn't Vader. It was the man they call Vader. I don't know who they are. I never really figured that part out, but he was the man they called Vader. Actually, he wanted to call him the Mastodon. Vince McMahon wanted to call Vader the Mastodon when they brought him in. And thankfully, he was talked out of that. Yeah, Vader's run, it's unfortunate. You know, he had a bum shoulder, like right when he came in. That's why they suspended him the night after on TV that he debuted. They suspended him because he had to have shoulder surgery. And then Vince needed him back for WrestleMania. So he never really had time to heal the shoulder. And I think that hampered his run a lot. And he put on a lot of weight, too. Because Vader, when he had his WCW run in 92, 93... I mean, Vader was the shit, man. Vader was fucking great. You talk about a monster heavyweight destroyer. Vader was the quintessential, you know, wrestling monster. But he had good matches with Sting and Davey Boy Smith and Ric Flair. So, and Ron Simmons for that matter. So, to see his run there and what it could have been in WWE was very disappointing. But he also wasn't 100%. Dr. Dakota Scorpio gifted a membership to Ice Cream for More. Who's going to be very happy, I'm sure, with that. That's awesome. There you go. Pillow v. Pillow, not to be outdone, just gifted 5 channel memberships to Drew McIncock. It's the kid. Daniel Anti or Anti, Nord, and Ali Irani, all new channel members. And I'm sure after that, if we haven't already, that we have smashed the 400 barrier. Now we got to aim for 450. Pillow v. Pillow, man, thank you very much. Look at this, a sea of green. A sea of green in the chat. Like it's St. Patrick's Day. Shin Superkick Akuma, thank you for the super chat. Food Hive says noodle pudding, just baked ziti, no cheese, brudda. 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 It's noodle pudding day, brudda. Noodle pudding. I thought it was jello, brudda. Where am I, brudda? Who's the president, brudda? Estelle Winslow. With the $5 super chat. I've always been a secret wrestling fan, Mr. Salamander. My son Carl had a match with the Bushwhackers. You are a handsome young man. Ms. Winslow. Ah, you make me blush. Thank you, Ms. Winslow. Thank you, Ms. Winslow. Tell your husband Carl that I said hello. Justin Jack with the $5 super chat. A week ago, I had a... Well, Cody just covered it. Hey, Cody, get out of the way. Phenomenal one. Thank you for the sub. phenomenal one, just subscribe to the channel. And Cody is really pumped up in that animation. He's a little too pumped up. Don't tear your heck again. Justin Jack, a week ago I had a panic attack and I walked out of my job, but your streams and podcast have helped me a lot. Thank you. Well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy that you are hopefully doing better. And again, you know, I said this, I don't know if it was to you or to somebody else, you know, last week, but again, don't be in a job that you hate. You know, some people can't just pick up and leave. I get that, but you know, nobody should be miserable every day when they go into work. So sometimes you just have to make a change. You know, it can be scary, but life is not without risks. So thank you, Justin Jack. Oh, is Estelle Carl's mom? Okay, I got it wrong. I thought that it was Carl's wife. That's right, Estelle. Well, I should have known that. Estelle is, I don't know too many young people named Estelle, to be fair. So, yes, Estelle was Carl Winslow's mother on Family Matters. That's right. I wonder if Mother Winslow is still alive. How old would Mother Winslow be if she was still alive? Ed Swoggle with the $5 super chat. Got tickets for the Go Home Raw for WrestleMania 39 today and going to AEW Dynamite on February 22nd. Should be interesting to see differences in production live. Cheers. Well, have fun, brother. You will enjoy it if you've not been to a live show ever or in a while. It's always a fun experience to be there live. So Mother Winslow died in 2002, according to Stephen White. So 20 years ago. She passed away. I guess that makes sense. I don't know how old she was when the show was filmed back in the 90s, but if she was alive now, she'd probably be fucking 115 years old. So rest in peace to Mother Winslow. I wonder what happened to the child they had in the... Jamie, right? Was it Jamie? The child they had in the early seasons of the show, the first season, who I think went upstairs one day and never came back down? Was it Jamie, the daughter? Graham B., would you talk Regal into a limousine explosion? If I'm Tony Khan, is that what I would have done? No. Estelle Winslow is back. Carl is my son. Fletcher is my husband. Sugar? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mother Winslow. I'll serve you some of my noodle pudding. HBKC83, I know this type of thing is subjective, having debates at work, and my question is there a legit argument for Jericho being the GOAT? Yes. Yes. Yes, there is. Because I think regardless of what you think of him as far as the run he's having right now, I know some people are just sick of seeing him. When you look at his body of work and everything he's accomplished everywhere he's been, and all of the different promotions that he's worked for and all of his accomplishments and championships and, you know, main events and pay-per-view main events, I mean, it's hard for him not to be in the conversation. Hey, by the way, Stephen Chapa just gifted another 5-channel membership. Steven, you are blowing my mind tonight, brother. Oh my God. Drew McIncock says these AEW streams are fun as fuck, aren't they? We always have fun. I don't know what's been going on the Raw show. I think Raw just bores people to sleep. I think Raw just bores people to sleep. But yeah, we always have fun on the AEW streams, regardless of how the show is. But yeah, to go back to Jericho, I definitely think there's an argument to be made. I'm not saying he is the greatest of all time, or he's my pick for greatest of all time, but I would not call you crazy if you thought that maybe he was. He had success in WCW, not at a main event level, but I enjoyed what he was doing. It got him over enough to where WWF had interest in him and they brought him in. He spent many, many years there. He reinvented himself a whole bunch of times and had longevity in that company, you know, for a very long time. He left and did big business working that main event against Kenny Omega for New Japan at the Wrestle Kingdom show. And that's what opened Tony Khan's eyes to the possibilities of starting his own wrestling company. And he parlayed that into a cushy spot working for Tony Khan, making, I'm sure, fucking bank. And, you know, first AEW world champion. And, I mean, you look at his body of work. It's very impressive. Not a lot of people can say they've traveled to all the places that he's been and had the success that he's had. You know, you don't have to be a Chris Jericho fan, I think, to acknowledge that he's had a hell of a career. He's had a very charmed career and very few serious injuries. The most serious injury he's had in his career was a broken arm. And that didn't even come during a match. He was practicing a move at a Smoky Mountain show in like 93 or 94 and broke his arm. And he still worked the match that night. He's one of the very few who have spent 30 years in the wrestling business. And it's like the guy's made of rubber. You know, he still has all of his body parts. He's still out there wrestling at a high level. So you got to respect the guy for that. Pillow versus Pillow. Favorite Tears for Fears song. Everybody Rules the World. Food Hive. Air-fried peanut butter and jelly topped with powdered sugar. I haven't tried that. I have an air fryer. I'm going to be doing some air-fried shrimp tempura next week. I am very excited to try. I've got 5 pounds of shrimp coming to my apartment. I don't know where it will fit in the freezer, but we'll find room for it. And I can't wait to air-fry. Well, I'm going to be doing some shrimp. I'll bread it first as well. But I'm trying to think of things I could try in my air fryer here. My air fryer, by the way, has been fucking great. I don't know how I lived for so long without one. So that'll be my next thing. Shrimp tempura. Bob the Builder, a perfect feud for Starks is Jericho. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Drew McIncock says, howdy, 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 Drew. And Crazy with the $2 super chat. Would you do a review on Teddy Hart's documentary? If I watch it, I will. I have not watched it yet. I did watch the final episode of Tales from the Territories today on Mid-South, which we will talk about on the podcast on Sunday. But yes, if I watch it, I will review it. I just have not had a chance to see it yet. I'm sure it's as crazy as people are saying that it is, which is funny coming from somebody in the super chats named Crazy. So Crazy, thank you for the $2. I appreciate it. We got Fallout dropping $2. Jericho or Triple H? Who had the better career? Well, Triple H is basically running WWE now. I'd say Triple H wins. Because you guys did smash the goal, and thank you for that, it is time. It is now time. Well, I'll let Noah Mark do that. It's time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Oh my goodness. Here we go again. It's another Wednesday night. And you know what that means. It is time to be the booker. Be the booker. Let us begin with the men's Be the Booker. 600 likes. You guys are beastly tonight here on the Dynamite stream. I don't know. It's like you guys get into a different stash on Wednesday nights than Mondays and Fridays. I don't know what it is. Maybe Mondays it's so fucking late. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But I think it's like you guys get into your parents' liquor cabinet or something. Or you get into the fucking, into the gummies. I don't know what it is. Actually, the gummies will probably calm you down. All right, let's see. We begin here with Murder Grandpa, Minoru Suzuki. I don't envy the opponent for Minoru Suzuki that I land on here. Always good to see Murder Grandpa here on the stream, and Murder Grandpa will be getting into the ring with Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle, who was written off television Monday night. No telling when we'll see him again. Matt Riddle and Minoru Suzuki. I like it. As long as we don't get goofy Matt Riddle. Keep goofy Matt Riddle at home. And I think that would be a heck of a match. Let's go to the women. Try our hand here. Riddle is dead, says Scarlett in the chat. Well, maybe they're going to change his character up. Maybe they're going to write him off TV for a reason. Maybe he failed the test. Who knows? Although that's legal now. They don't punish you for that in WWE anymore. We begin here with the lovely Miss Elizabeth. My first wrestling crush. My first crush, period, actually. Miss Elizabeth. A classy lady. Not a wrestler, though. So I don't know about her getting in the ring. Miss Elizabeth stepping into the ring against Chelsea Green back in her days at, what was her name? My God, I just popped out of my head. Oh, what was her name in Impact? Why do I always forget her name in Impact? Anyway, Elizabeth and Chelsea Green. Elizabeth is not a wrestler. Elizabeth! Not a wrestler. Laurel Van Ness, thank you. I always forget her fucking name in Impact. Laurel Van Ness, the hot mess. Look at that. That's what Matt Cardona gets to go home to every night. The hot mess. Yeah, that matches no buys. So let's move on to the tag teams. Let's wrap this bad boy up here. And we begin with the American Wolves, former TNA Tag Team Champions, Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, who had one tryout match in NXT where Davey Richards botched a spot. And I guess that doomed them because they never got called back after that. So we got the American Wolves. Not a bad way to start. And it'll be the Wolves stepping into the ring against Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. By God, Kang. Hell of an announced team. Not a very good tag team. See, I call these poison pills. You got to drop some poison pills in Be the Booker. They can't all be great. They can't all be winners. Otherwise, it would be boring. But it is an interesting match to think about how that would go. I don't think it would go very... Jerry Lawler could hold his own. Jim Ross, not so much. But that's what you call a poison pill. Not a great night for Be the Booker. Yeah, Lawler's got, you know, he's got that Memphis experience, but it would basically be a 2-on-1 handicap match. So I don't know about that one. Michael Cuomo, has Flair had an injury besides the plane crash? Yes, Flair had actually a terrible inner ear injury that the Ultimate Warrior caused, surprise, surprise, dropped him on his fucking head when they wrestled in WWE in 92. But I'm pretty sure Flair has hurt his shoulder. I mean, he's had some injuries over the years. Nothing overly serious outside of the plane crash, I don't think, but he's definitely had injuries. Jay Baker with the $1.99. Thank you to whoever gifted me a membership, a nice surprise. Yes, thank you to everybody who gifted memberships to many new people tonight in the chat, who now get to enjoy the benefits of being a member, the emojis, early access to some special features. Of course, the higher tier, there are episodes of the Sound Off from the very beginning that cannot be found anywhere else. The first 13, with more to come, are up for the Legends tier. So thank you to Jay Baker. Thomas Rondon with the $2. To all the moms in heaven, God bless them. Well said. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, Riddle comes back as the Riddler. Don't give them any ideas. Jay Baker says, Dr. Dakota Scorpio, you are the best. Cheers. I guess he found out who gifted him that membership. And finally here, I hate for the fun to come to an end, but not the, it sounds like I'm putting Food Hive down. Well, I guess we got to go to Food Hive now. Now, Food Hive ends the fun here. Food Hive says, first crush, Kimberly, Pink Ranger, Topanga, and Myra. So you had a lot of crushes. I thought you were going to name one. You just named everybody's crush from the early 90s there. Kimberly was the Pink Ranger. See, at first I thought you were talking about Kimberly Page, DDP's ex-wife, who is still, you know, back in the day, one of the most beautiful women I ever saw. Topanga, yes, Topanga was easy on the eyes. Myra, right? He says Myra from Family Matters. Myra was the psychotic one, right? Myra was the psycho from the show. She was cute. I always had a thing for Lisa Turtle on Saved by the Bell. Lark Voorhees. I always had a thing for her. Everyone always talking about Kelly Kapowski. And Kelly Kapowski was a beautiful girl, but that Lisa Turtle, man. Screech had the right idea. Yes, rest in peace, Myra. Myra died. That's right. She died many years ago. Forgot about that. She's very young. Hilary Banks. Yes. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Hilary Banks. There you go. She was another one. Kelly Bundy. From Married with Children. Punky Brewster. Oh, my God. Punky Brewster. That might have been the first television show I sat down and watched. Estelle Winslow, Mother Winslow is back yet again from the grave. Mother Winslow from beyond has, I guess, become a wrestling fan. And let's see what Mother Winslow has to say here. Should be coming. Here we go. First crush. Oh, Mother Winslow had crushes on people. Tootie from Facts of Life, and Janet from Three's Company. So Mother Winslow was a lesbian. How about that? Look at that. We just learned something new. I'll never look at Family Matters again the same way. I just smashed my fucking hand into my table here. I think I broke my hand. There you go. Ow. I guess I got a little too excited at that revelation here. Mother Winslow is a lesbian. How about that? The facts of life. Yeah, take the good, you take the bad, and take them both, and there you have the facts of life. Jay Baker says, who's your favorite baddie? Layla, Red, or Hogan? I got to go with Red Velvet. Sabrina the Teenage Witch. She's a big wrestling fan. Melissa Joan Hart. Actually, wait, is she a wrestling fan? I think she is. Plus, I'm thinking of Topanga, but I thought Melissa Joan Hart might have been a wrestling fan, too. William, I talked about Verlander to the Mets on Monday. So if you go back to the beginning of the stream after the introduction, I talk about Verlander there. Mother Winslow says that young Sidney Poitier will always have my love. What was that movie he did with Tom Berenger? I don't remember the name. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that movie. She was at an AEW show. Yeah, I know Topanga was at an AEW show. I don't remember. I thought of Melissa Joan Hart when somebody mentioned Sabrina. Oh, she was in the crowd at an AEW show. Okay, so maybe she is a wrestling fan. I knew I'm not totally crazy. Shoot to Kill. Thank you, EJ. Shoot to Kill. Yeah, I thought Shoot to Kill. I thought I was thinking of a Steven Seagal movie for a second. That was Hard to Kill, I think. Shoot to Kill. Sidney Poitier and Tom Berenger, who was also the substitute. And then I think it was Jim Belushi who was in the substitute part two, if I'm not. Or no, maybe it was the principal. I don't know why I'm thinking of all these fucking 80s and fucking early 90s B action movies, but yeah, I maybe see the one with Belushi. I think Louis Gossett Jr. was in there as well, and I think that might have been the principal. Yeah. Melissa Joan Hart had a Twitter beef with Kevin Owens a few years back when Kevin Owens came up to the main roster. I have no memory of that. Food Hive says Rangers World Series, baby. Sure. I'm sure 2027 will be your year. Salamanzer talking about women and Katrina pops up on screen. He gets very angry when I start talking about other women. I better keep my mouth shut. And Dr. Dakota Scorpio, one last one for the road, gifted a channel membership to Mike Mars. So, Mike, welcome to the channel member family. And Dakota, I've lost track of how many that is tonight, but I appreciate that very much. Yeah, Bliss fan says, still no Adam Cole. Hopefully he's back soon. But, you know, again, this concussion stuff, you just don't know. It's scary because he's been out since June. Yeah, it's half a year gone. So hopefully he'll be back soon. They could definitely use another name on TV, but being out that long, that's not good. That's not good. Jennifer Love Hewitt. Oh, of course. How could I forget? Even though she threw up on the president once, but that's okay. Jennifer Love Hewitt. Yes. Now you're taking me back. One last look at the poll here. Again, Dynamite tonight. Excellent show. 77% of you agree with me. Only 10% thumbs down. So this was a very enjoyable episode. Ring of Honor Final Battle is this Saturday at 4 o'clock Eastern. That's the start time. 8 p.m. is the NXT deadline pay-per-view. I will have thoughts on both of those shows on the podcast on Sunday because I will not be here for most of the day on Saturday. I probably won't even be able to watch these shows until Saturday night. I'm going to have to cram them all in, but that's what they make alcohol for. And then a UFC pay-per-view at 10 p.m. that I will not be watching. So I'm going to be back here live with you Friday night. Let's try to take some of the AEW energy and apply it to Friday night when we talk about SmackDown. I might even watch Rampage live. Not making any promises. But I might possibly watch Rampage live on Friday. We'll see. Then I have to start later, though. That's the trade-off. You go live at 10:20, you go live at 11:20. I don't know. We'll see. But that'll be the next time I'm live with you here on YouTube. Please, again, hit the subscribe button. Try to get us to 72K by the end of the year. Hit the like button on the video on the way out. We killed our goal tonight. So let's try to just run up the score if we can. And consider becoming a channel member. Even if nobody gifts you one, you can still become one. Hit the join button down below. It'll give you all the information. I'm the Salamonster. I'm out of here. And I will see you back here Friday night for the SmackDown stream. Thank you all for the love and all the fun tonight. Take care, guys.